Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Western publics are told the collective West must defeat Russia, inflict a strategic defeat on the Kremlin, all in the name of democracy. Meanwhile, the Kiev regime has announced this year's parliamentary elections and next year's presidential election is suspended. So much for Ukrainian democracy. Crosstalking Ukraine's so-called democracy, I'm joined by my guest, Anthony Weber in Worthing. He is an independent political commentator. And here in Moscow, we have Sonia van den Ende. She is an independent journalist. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Anthony, let me go to you first. I mean, I find it really quite curious, to say the least, and watching over the last 15 months Western public officials coming out and saying, we have to protect democracy. There's no democracy in Ukraine. There won't be a democracy in the West. Okay? If we don't fight them there, though, we'll have to fight them here. And we've heard it over and over and over again. Then we hear that rather casually from the authorities in Kiev that, well, elections are suspended right now. This is on the heels of nationalizing the media, where it's a one monotone message. No opposition parties and opposition figures are either in jail, house arrest, or exiled. And the West continues to talk about the virtues of democracy in Ukraine. Your thoughts, Anthony?
Well, this is all being kept fairly quiet from the public, certainly in the UK, and I'm sure in other NATO countries as well. It must be remembered that war-torn Syria managed to have elections. So did Afghanistan when NATO were there. And many other countries in the world have had elections, not only during times of war, but even during the so-called COVID pandemic. So there's absolutely no excuse whatsoever not to have elections. And I think the reason is that there are more and more people in Ukraine who are dissatisfied with the Zelensky government and want to actually have peace. Of course, we hear that there have been about 400,000 dead amongst the Ukrainian military, not including, many, many more casualties. And it is very concerning. They want to shut up any opposition. And any so-called Western country worth its salt would be insisting that if they were going to be defending democracy, so-called, then there must be democracy there. And of course, it isn't there, hasn't been there for some considerable time. So let's see what happens, but it's very concerning.
Yeah, Sonia, it's very interesting. I guess we could pick 2016 with the advent of Trump and Brexit. Western elites are very tepid these days when it comes to democracy, okay? I can remember it was a British publication, I think, after Brexit, and say, we have too much democracy. We shouldn't have referenda anymore. We have too much democracy. Meanwhile, speed up to today, okay, we've already talked about Ukraine is suspending its democratic procedures, but you have in Moldova, they want to ban a Moldovan party because it's pro-Russian. They never mention that it's probably anti-government. That's why it's popular. In Bulgaria, they want to start banning parties there because they're pro-Russian, but maybe they're not satisfied with the government in Sofia. Also, the alternative for Germany, it's the number two party now in Germany in public opinion polls. What do you bet, my friend? They're going to start finding reasons to ban that party, too, because they're going to all do it in the name of Ukraine's democracy, apparently. Sonia, go ahead.
Yes, right. And what you said in the alternative for Germany, they won a very small village somewhere in Thuringia. They won the election there, the AfD, Alternative for Germany. So they are afraid now, but they are afraid for a long time already. But what happened today in the Netherlands is really, yeah, it's crazy. You know, we have also a political party there that's Forum for Democracy. And already a long time they are saying, oh, you know, they are a right-wing extremist and so on. And now they are really going to suspend this party. And there was a whole debate yesterday in the parliament. And they said, oh, you know, he's spreading fake news. And he's paid by Russia, of course. This is the first thing they come up with. And the same in Germany. And you can see it all over Europe. It's, you know, all the parties who not only are, you can say they are supporting of Russia. No, you even dare to say something positive or even neutral. Then they start saying, oh, yeah, but you're not with us, you know, because, you know, Russia is waging a war on Ukraine and so on. So it's democracy. There's no democracy. There's no democracy in Europe anymore. I've said that a lot of times already. I wrote about it. And I hear it every day from people, friends who I have in the Netherlands or in Germany. Democracy is gone and it's in everything. It's gone. And if you're going to suspend political parties, I mean, you do the same as what Hitler did in July 1933. He forbid all opposition parties. Well, this is happening again. It's like a deja vu.
Yeah. Go ahead, Anthony. Jump in. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes, I was going to add to that we've had the situation regarding NATO membership, and Finland has become a member, but of course they never had the referendum that the public were promised on this issue, and indeed all these policies on Ukraine and Russia by some Western countries, including the United Kingdom, they've got no mandate whatsoever from the public. So the public have been denied a say on these policies regarding Ukraine and Russia. So it only adds fuel to the argument that there is no real democracy at the moment.
Sonia, if I'm not mistaken, there was a vote, the referendum in the Netherlands about the European Association Agreement, and the public didn't pass it. But then the government they just disregarded the democratic will of the people of the Netherlands. Am I correct? Am I remembering that correctly, Sonia?
Yes. It was in 2016. And the majority of the Dutch people said, no, we don't want Ukraine to be part of, it was an association treaty, not European Union yet, but, you know, the forerunner for this. And they said, no, because there's a lot of corruption in Ukraine. And so they have to solve that first. And then, you know, we can have a new referendum. But they say, okay, you know, we're not going to we're not going to implement this because... I would just put something in there. I don't know how they managed it, what they're going to say. The government said, we are going to say something that in front of our partners, the European Union, that, you know, maybe the Dutch people said no, but still we have to continue with this whole association treaty. And this is what they did. And this is democratic Netherlands. And after that, they abolished the whole referendum system in the Netherlands. So they forbade it. I mean, that's democracy in Europe.
Yeah, well, you know what, in the wake of the Pogrozhin nonsense that we had here in Russia over the weekend, it's quite amazing, Anthony, how the West continues to misread what's going on in Russia. Actually, you know, there was an emphatic rejection of the clownish behavior of this individual here. But of course, the walls are caving in. The Putin's days are over. I mean, what they do is instead of stepping back and trying to understand what's going on, what they're looking is for affirmation of their own prejudices. And they certainly got it with that episode. Anthony.
Yes, the Pogrozhin situation and the Wagner mercenary group did make one think quite a lot. I mean, obviously, there's more to come out, but it does appear that the Russian security services knew about this in advance. And so, of course, did people like the CIA. And there are allegations that this was tried to be made use of by America and the Allies to try and not just destabilize the front line in Ukraine, but destabilize Russia as well. And it was a dismal failure. And it does underline why people in certain countries completely misunderstand the Russian character.
Well, but Anthony, let me ask you a question here. I mean, if the CIA, I mean, the CIA, by its profession, is to lie to the public. We all know that. But okay, having said that, they claim that they know the interworkings of what's going on in Russian domestic politics, but they can't tell us who blew up the Nord Stream pipelines. How is that possible? How can they both be true at the same time, Anthony?
Well, they can't be. And of course, they know who drew up the pipelines, but they're not going to give it to the public because it wouldn't suit their purposes. And of course, the whole propaganda line is everything about this conflict. Russia's in the wrong, and Ukraine's in the right. And if you repeat a lie often enough, as Goebbels used to say, people will actually believe it. But those of us in Western countries have got to look at what is actually in our interests and what's in the world's interests, and even in what's in the Ukraine's interests. And it's in no one's interests, apart from some globalist corporations, for there to be a continuation of this conflict. And there's been a lot of lying going on, giving the impression this is some sort of noble cause. And of course, we've exploded the myth that it's to do with democracy and values, but it's actually to do with protecting our vested interests, because of course, Ukraine is rich in natural resources, which people want to exploit.
Well,
which...
of course, the one agenda here is plundering, and a lot of it has already happened. By the way,
yes.
Hunter Biden was first in line to plunder. It's really quite amazing. Weeks after the coup, bam, they were on the ground. All right, we're going to have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine's so-called democracy. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine's so-called democracy. Okay, let's introduce our latest guest here, Ehsan Safarnijan from Iran. He's a geopolitical analyst. Welcome to the program. In the first part of the program, we were talking a little bit about Ukraine's domestic politics and the lack of democracy. And now we have the upcoming NATO summit in Vilnius. Ehsan, I thought only NATO brought in democratic countries. So if Ukraine is suspending all of the electoral and democratic processes, what business does it have to be in NATO? It's supposed to be a club of NATO of democratic countries. Go ahead, in Iran.
Well, we all know that the honest truth to this is that NATO is not concerned with democracy. It's actually a very hostile, imperialistic organization that seeks to further the agenda of the United States by any means necessary, and to the extent that it's even willing to undermine democracies in the European countries. Of course, many people in Europe are now complaining about the fact that they don't really believe that the governmental officials that they voted for have really any real power, and they feel that their voice is not being heard. Their protest is going nowhere, and their country keep engaging in this proxy warfare against Russia. And, you know, their budget is being spent on procuring this the Zelensky regime, which is a very corrupt regime, in its fight against Russia. So it was never about democracy. It was about, you know, moving NATO to the eastern, you know, starting a proxy war with Russia and weakening the country. That was their objective. In fact, if we even go back and we read the articles published in different think tanks, like the Rand Institute, we know that some of the sanctions that they imposed in Iran, they were calibrating their measures in order to be able to later on use those formulas on Russia and China. So, considering everything that has happened and the trajectory that the United States and NATO countries are moving towards to reaching a certain type of goal, I can say that the double standard is here as always, and Ukraine can go to that summit and they can talk about democracy all they want, but we know the actual truth. We know that the moves like this, wars like this, are based on incentives like economic resources, corridors, weakening potential adversaries and competitors on a global market, energy market, and things like that. So I, for one, and many others, we don't really buy into narrative well, that this is well, all about
well
democracy.
My question about democracy was obviously facetious, and you perfectly understood that. Sonia, just out of curiosity, if NATO believed in democracy, which we just heard it doesn't, and I don't believe it believes in democracy, but let's just say, for example, if there was an election in the Netherlands, should Ukraine be allowed into NATO? What do you think the populace would say? I don't care what the elites say. I mean, your elites are against farmers. Those elites are some of the worst people that have ever walked the earth. Farmers are good people, okay? And now they want to bring in another agricultural country into NATO, into the European Union. My point is, dear, would the public support that? If NATO actually did believe in democracy, go ahead.
I still think they will not support it because they know that, Ukraine, as they voted in 2016, they voted no to be part of association treaty and to be part of the EU later on. So they know that this is a corrupt country, and now they see what is happening with the special military operation. So the broad public in the Netherlands now, I think their eyes are open and they know that, you know, what is really going on. So, no, I don't think they will vote in favor of Ukraine voting, joining NATO. And another thing, I mean, NATO came so close to the Russian border, and this is what people also see now, that, I mean, there was somehow, I don't know if it was written or it was oral, but it was after the collapse of the Soviet Union. They said that, you know, they will not go very close to the Russian Federation that time. And they did. This is what the hypocrisy of the West is doing all the time. And another part is, I wrote somehow an article about it a few weeks or 2 months ago. NATO actually was set up by ex-SS members, so German, you know, from the Second World War, from the Nazi regime. They were the founders of NATO. So, I mean, we still have this fascism in Europe, and maybe it lingered for a while, and then with all the ex-Soviet republics, it gained their independence. Slowly but surely, it came to the surface, like in Lithuania, and we see that all the time now, and these fascist people now are gaining ground. We see that also with, you know, the statues they tear down and everything. So, and even, you know, they would say, okay, you can join NATO, but, you know, the words from NATO is, yes, you can join NATO, only when you win the war.
Well, okay, that's what I wanted to go. Anthony, that was an extraordinary statement by Stoltenberg, the head of NATO, is that you can join the club once you defeat Russia. I mean, if you were in Kiev, what would you be thinking? You brought us all this way. You made all these promises, and you open the door, you shove them through, and then you slam it closed and say, when you win, give us a call. It's extraordinary. Go ahead, Anthony.
Well, it is. And of course, do they ask the Ukrainian people if they want their country to join NATO? I suspect if they're given some freedom and democracy, a lot of them would actually say no to that. And of course, you know, going back in time when we had the President Reagan and Gorbachev era, there was a move in the direction of world peace, which is commendable. And again, about that time, President Putin himself said that Russia was thinking of applying to join NATO. So, you know, times have moved on. We've got different politicians on the world stage. You could argue politicians who are more controlled by global corporations who don't care about the public. But we certainly have a situation where NATO, its original intentions, supposed to be defensive. And to be peaceful. Pardon?
Yeah. That's a very good point. Let me go to my guess. Let's go to Iran here. The Article 5, the vaunted Article 5 of the NATO treaty, is always brought up here. But NATO's behavior in wanting, in the future, it will never bring in Ukraine into NATO. It's never going to happen. I don't know why so much time is wasted on it. But we're going to continue with talking about their plans. It's a violation of Article 1 of the NATO treaty. They're not supposed to be an aggressive organization. Inducting a country like Ukraine or Moldova or Georgia would be a violation of their first article. But I don't even think Stoltenberg knows the first article. He just takes his talking point from Jake Sullivan. Go ahead, in Iran.
Yeah, exactly. The point is that if there is no conflict, then NATO will cease to exist. The entirety of this organization is alive on the basis of never-ending wars. And, going back to the topic of whether they're going to, allow Ukraine join the NATO organization, obviously it's not going to happen. It was just some bait that they dangled in front of the Zelensky regime in order to lure them into this trap with the Russian bears. Obviously they're not doing too good. The counteroffensive is going very badly, very poorly. There is no clear roadmap as to what they're going to do and what their plan is, because they have done a lot of things which many security analysts would have thought to be impossible and maniacal, but they have done it, like providing the Ukrainian forces with depleted uranium, which if you had asked the security analysts, they would say that NATO organization is crazy, but it's not that crazy, but now
I agree with you. But you know what? It shows their complete disregard and disrespect for Ukrainians, Ukrainian soldiers, and Ukrainian civilians. This is so callous. It's so cruel, Sonia. You know, they're fighting this proxy war. It's a NATO proxy war against Russia, and Ukraine is the fodder. And that's the kind of moral compass these people have pursuing this war. They don't give a hoot about Ukraine. Sonia.
No, that's right. And this is what they did before in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan. They don't give a damn about people there. I mean, okay, a lot of people fled to Europe, but quite a large majority fled to Russia itself, because they are Russian. So also there are now statements coming out from soldiers, POWs. They are saying all the time they were trained somehow in France or Slovenia. And you know what they said to them? The first thing, it's not about handling weapons or training like that. No, they say you have to hate the Russians. This is their, psychology, what they are saying. And Ukrainians are suffering. They're suffering a lot. I saw it myself in the Donbas. These people are merciless. They kill people. They kill children, elderly people. And the only ones now left, a lot of them, are the elderly, children, mothers with children, because all the men are on the front lines. But they don't even care about their soldiers. They don't even have enough soldiers. That's why the counteroffensive is going so bad. This is also what is known now. So, they don't care about people. They never did and they never will. This is the elites, the regimes, what we have these days in the Western world.
And we've seen with all these sanctions and counter-sanctions that Western elites don't even care about their own people. That's also the tragedy of all. That's all the time we have. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Worthing, Iran, and in Moscow. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.